Recording.
We're holding on page 36 in Sanhedrin Os Lamed Vav. So beginning Zebor Perek Shlishi. The subject of the main subject of this Perek is Dine Momenus. In fact, the actual first words of the usually a Perek is named after its first words. Here the first words are in fact Dine Momenus, but the first Perek also begins Dine Momenus, so instead they called this one the first unique words in it Zebor. So it talks about, you know, you need a base din of three for Dine Momenus. It doesn't have to be three official Rabbonim or Smuchim or anything like that. You can have, as the Mishnah describes, Zeb Boru Le'echad, where each of the Bala Dinim picks one Dayan, who he figures is more likely to see things his way. Not that it'll be biased in his favor, you can't do that, but at least, in other words, he knows, you know, this guy is more on the same wavelength as me, and he'll be more sensitive to my kindness, that kind of thing. And then, you need a third one for the Beis Din, so that this is, if you've heard of a Zabla Beis Din, that's where it comes from, Zeb Boru Le'echad, the acronym is Zabla. Anyway, so who picks the third Dayan? The Mishnah mentions a Machlokes Reb Meir and the Chachamim. Reb Meir holds the two Bala Dinim pick the third Dayan together, and the Chachamim hold that the other two, that the first two Dayanim pick the third one. So the Gemara discusses what's the basis of the Machlokes. Is it maybe that Reb Meir says the Dayanim have no ability to say, we don't want to sit in a Din Torah with this particular person? So in other words, according to Reb Meir, the idea would be the Bala Dinim can pick the third Dayan, and if the two Dayanim don't like him, tough luck. Whereas according to the Chachamim, you have to have the consent of the first two Dayanim to agree to the third one. And in that case, then the Gemara would say, but what about we find the following piece of the Gemara that we're going to quote here now in any Akam? Anyway, the Gemara ends up answering that no, all it is that the mayor says that you need the consent of both, the two Dayanim and the Bala Dinim, for the third Dayan. And the Chum say you don't. It's enough that you have the consent of the two Dayanim. And if the two Bala Din don't like the third guy, tough luck. So the Gemara brings the following piece. Tanya, Kachoyun Nekiei Hadas Shvi Yerushalayim Oisin. The pure-minded people in Yerushalayim would do as follows. They wouldn't sign on a document unless they knew who is signing together with them. What happens, because if not, Rashi points out, and what happens if one of the Edom who signs together with them is Possel, then the whole Edus is going to become Possel, so therefore it's an embarrassment to them that they sign on something where it's Possel or Edus. The Yad Ramah points out another point as well, that people are going to start questioning their own fitness as Edim. If we see that one Ed was possible, maybe the other Ed is also no good. And there's a couple of other reasons that Mephoshim give why they would only sign on a shtar only if they knew who was with them. Marshall points out, by the way, I mean, a Yid has a cheskas kashus, so there's nothing wrong in per se with signing with on document together with a fellow Yid, even though you don't know what his caliber is. Nevertheless, though, these Nekiyei Hadas were extra careful on that kind of thing, and they wouldn't do that. Anaf Yosef, interestingly, brings a long thing in this case. What's this expression, Nekiyei Hadas? So you have the famous Braisa of Pinchas Ben Yorah, which is in a few places in Shas. The whole Sefer Mesilas Yesharim is based on that. Zehirus brings to Zrizus, Zrizus brings to Nekiyus, and so forth. And you have levels upon levels of greater and greater Midas in Avodas Hashem, which eventually bring a person to Hasidus and Ruach HaKodesh and so forth. So he explains that Zehirus is a person that's careful not to do an Avera. Nekiyus is a person who brings himself to a state where he's not even going to have an inclination to an Avera. So that means Kiyah Das are people who cultivated within themselves that kind of nikius that they shouldn't even have an inclination to avedus. Anyway, so they point to Tanya, they would be called tzaddikim then. So they wouldn't sign on a shtar unless they knew who signs with them. They wouldn't sit in a din torah unless they know who's sitting with them. So this is what the Gemara point is pointing out, that you can't very well have, according to the mayor, that the two Bala Dinim picked the third Dayan without consulting with the first two Dayanim, then what if these Dayanim are from the Nekiyei Hadas and they're not going to do that? And the Loihoi Nechnosim Besuda, and Ken Yodim Mimesiv Imohem, they wouldn't go in and participate in a Suda unless they knew who is reclining at the Suda together with them. In other words, they didn't want to be at a Suda together with Amei or Oretz or other people like that. The Mishnah Berurah actually points out it's not necessarily they would make sure there's no Amei HaAretz at the entire Suda. It's just they wouldn't want to sit near them. As long as at their table or their area or whatever is all Talmid Chachamim, is all Erlich HaJews, then they would be fine with that even if there are Amei HaAretz someplace else in the hall or something.
Does that mean they come at the end of they're the last ones to come into the...
No, not necessarily the last ones. There would be a guest list that they could... There would be a guest list where they would know that Pliny have been invited to this meal, and they could look over the guest list and see, is that something we'd want to come to?
What's the reason behind it?
The reason behind it is all that, in other words, they want to be extra careful to stay away from Psulim and Amei Oretz and to only be together with Jews who are known to be Erlach and known to be Talmid Chachamim. In that connection, interesting, worth mentioning, an interesting point, when you have the story in the Agadah of the Churban and Gith in the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, where it says over there the Chacham didn't protest when Bar Kamsa was kicked out, and Bar Kamsa said, you see, they approve of it, and he went and mastered on them. So actually, Rabbi Victor Miller, in a couple of places in his writings, makes a point that those Chachamim weren't necessarily wrong in doing so. Because based on this, because what are they doing in a Suda with people that they don't approve of? Nevertheless, though, according to the Mishnah Berurah, it comes out not necessarily, because fine, don't sit near him, but why should he not be someplace else in the hall? And besides, anyway, I mean, the Pashtus, we would say, it's not right that they should cause it, that they should allow him to be humiliated publicly, and sinas chinam and everything that. Bechlau, Rav Miller has a whole shite in that Gemara over there. He explains there was no sinas chinam over there. He explains this guy was Taka, Rosha, and Tzeduki, and they had every right to throw him out. He says it was just careless, because you see, he has connections in the government that should have been careful not to antagonize. But anyway, so the point is, in other words, again, so the Gemara says, so you have to allow the Dayanim the ability to be able to reject a potential Dayan to sit with them, and therefore even the mayor is not saying that they can't do that. He's just saying you also need the consent of the Baalei Din themselves for the third Dayan. The Mishnah says another machlokas of Meir and the Chachamim that Amar Meir zep poisel aid of Shalzev zep poisel aid of Shalzev. Now each of the Baalei Din is going to be bringing aidim to the Beis Din. So the Meir says in the Mishnah that each one of them can give reasons why the other one's aidim should be poisel. And then Beis Din has to accept that and tell the guy, well then you got to find another aidim. So the Gemara says, Amar Shlokish Peh Kodesh Yoma Dovazeh. How could a holy mouth of Reb Meir say such a thing? How could Reb Meir possibly say that one Baal Din, who himself is biased, and he has two Adim against him, how does he have the ability to just say Stamazoi without a valid reason? I hold that these two Adim are possible. I don't want the Beis Din to listen to their Adim. So you can't do such a thing. So Rosh Lakish says, Tony A. Doi. It must be that the wording that we have from a mayor in the Mishnah is not correct in what we're saying, A. Doi. In a case where the other Baal Din is bringing one aid, then he has the ability to say that one aid is possible and go find another aid instead. Because one aid, after all, has a very weak power. He can cause a shavua. He can. There's certain things that one aid has a power for, but not so much as two. The Gemara actually goes through a whole sugya explaining what exactly is the circumstance where the guy is bringing one aid, and we're going to believe a Baal Din against that one aid. But anyway, the point is, Reb Shlokish says it's impossible that the holy mouth of Reb Meir could possibly have said that a dove that Reuven is bringing two apparently kosher witnesses, and Shimon just on his say so should be able to disqualify them. Can't be.
I think disqualify even one.
Why? But has that whole discussion. Zatzik Gemara has a whole discussion of it, which is not here in any act of what exactly the circumstances are. But again, one aid doesn't have such a strong power in halacha, so therefore you could say it's, you know, one against one kind of. Anyway, the Gemara also points out there's a difference of what kind of psul is he claiming. Is he claiming they're apostle, for example, because they're Baalei Averus? Is he claiming that they're apostle because they're relatives of the kind that are apostle to testify? Or whatever. There's different possibilities of what exactly he's claiming against this one aid or two aid or whatever. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amy, is that so that Rish Lakish would speak in such a respectful way about Reb Meir and call him Peh Kodesh? Didn't Ula say, if somebody were to see Rish Lakish in the Beis Medrash when he's learning and discussing in Torah, you could compare him to somebody who's ripping up mountains out of the ground and grinding them once another. Because one against the other. In other words, he's taking different things in Torah and slugging them out and showing how apparently one of them contradicts the other and then using his prowess in Torah to find the answer. So somebody like Rish Lakish like that, who has such tremendous powers in Torah, he would be speaking in such a humble way about Reb Meir and call him Peh Kodesh. The Gemara seems to be saying that it's strange that he would do that. So Omer Ravina, so Ravina says, why? What's the problem? She should know that if you saw the mayor when he was sitting in the base medrash and discussing the Torah, then it would be as if he's taking mountains upon mountains and grinding them one another. So in other words, have, as great as Shlokish was in his ability to analyze things in Torah, Reb Meir is taka greater, so therefore it's not so strange that Shlokish would refer to the mayor in such a respectful way. He would realize, as great as I am in my abilities in Torah, I realized that a mayor had much greater abilities. Why we're comparing it to mountains, by the way, Marsha mentions an interesting point around Marsha refers over here to explain at the end of Herdius that in connection with Matan Torah, in connection with Shavuos that's coming up, we know that the Eberster gave us the Torah on Har Sinai. So that's Horim. But on the other hand, we have Horim. We have other mountains came and argued the Torah should be given on them as well. And Hashem rejected them. So in other words, the difference is when a person has a solid knowledge of the fundamentals of Torah, the Gemara calls him at the end of Herdius Sinai. He's like Har Sinai. He has the actual Torah that was given on Har Sinai. When a person doesn't have all of that, but he has this great ability to be able to analyze and point out contradictions and then divide logically what the halacha should be, that can be compared to the Horim and the Horim, those other mountains that didn't have the qualities of Har Sinai and still argued that the Torah should be given on us. So the point is, so what's so strange that Shlokish would refer to the mayor with such a respectful expression, Peh Kodesh? So the Gemara said, you're right. When Ula is saying that, or when Rosh Lakish is saying Peh Kodesh Yom Adavazer, and was surprised by that Halchi Karma. On the contrary, what we mean is it's not as a question. It's not how would we expect Rosh Lakish to say such a thing? On the contrary, it's said in admiration. Boyerei kam machabvin zezeh. Come and look how much the Talmid Chacham of Eretz Yisrael love and respect one another. Both Rosh Lakish and the mayor lived in Eretz Yisrael. Mayor is a couple of generations before Rish Lakish, but to see how much they love and respect one another. In other words, that Rish Lakish, as great and as sharp as he was, he still takes care to call Reb Meir by respectful name, Peh Kodesh. So in other words, he's not just going to say, I don't understand Reb Meir, or something like that. He's going to say, a holy mouth of Reb Meir, how could he possibly say such a thing? As an expression of respect and love, we have to force ourselves, how are we going to understand what the mayor said in such a way that it won't contradict everything else that we know. So we see that he's putting in that effort and calling him Peh Kodesh like that, rather than just kind of dismissing it. He didn't hear from him personally, because like I said, he was a couple of generations later. But the point is, in other words, like this, Rosh Lakish could have said, with my knowledge of Torah, I determine that it's that Reb Meir, he could have said something like, Reb Meir doesn't know what he's talking about, or whatever, something like that. He could have, like, dismissed it. Instead, he says, very respectfully, Peh Kodesh Yom Adavazeh. In other words, we have to now force ourselves, we have to work on it, to try to figure out what Reb Meir really meant. So that shows, in other words, the love and the respect that Talmid Chacham and Eretz Yisrael have for one another. As the Gemara is going to go on to say, as opposed to in Babel, where they were much more combative about it and they would fight with one another over the Torah. As we see, the Gemara says, Kihodi Yosef Rebbe. As we find another example also involving the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael, one time Rebbe was sitting in the Beis Medrash, the Ka'amar, and he was saying again, Osu Lahatmin Esatsoinen. You're not allowed to insulate cold food to keep it cold. Now you have like this. Normally you want to insulate before Shabbos or on Shabbos. You want to insulate hot food to keep it hot over Shabbos. Now you have, and then the Sefer Shabbos, it discusses details about it. You can't do that on Shabbos itself. Even before Shabbos, there are rules. You can't put it in something that's moisif hevel that increases the heat, and there's a whole sugyas about it in the Sefer Shabbos. So now, though, you could have the other way around as well. You have, let's say, a bottle of cold water or something, and you want it to stay cold. You don't have a refrigerator in those days. So what would you do? Let's say you bury it in sand or in cold sand or something like that, so it'll stay cold over Shabbos. So Rebbe's saying you can't do that. Because if you do that, then you might come to do the same thing with hot food and be over on that issue. However, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, who was present there in the Beis Medrash, he says, no, Abba Hitzu Lahachman Hatzonin. My father, Rabbi Yossi, said you are allowed to insulate cold food on Shabbos. Amalei, So Rebbe says, okay, in that case, then I take back what I said. Kvar Hura Zokin, the elder Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Yossi, has said a psak halacha that way, and in that case, then I take back what I said, and I accept what your father, Rabbi Yossi, said. And similarly, the Omer HaPapa, said a papa, generations later, looking at this exchange, says similarly, come and see from this how much the Talmud Chacham of Eretz Yisrael loved one another. The either Rabbi Yossi Kayam, had Rabbi Yossi personally still been alive, then have a kofel for Yoshev Lifnei Rebbe. He would have to be bent over and sitting in front of Rebbe. In other words, he would have to be sitting in a very subservient way as Rebbe's Talmud, even though he's older than Rebbe. And we know that to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi Mamalam Mokam Avos of Hava, we know that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi fully filled his father's place. He was every bit the Talmud Chacham and all the other good qualities of his father Rabbi Yossi. The Hava Kofel for Yoshev Lifnei Rebbe, and he's sitting in a very subservient position in front of Rebbe. So if Rabbi Yossi had been alive, he would have had to do the same, he would have done the same thing. The Ka'omar, and yet Rebbe says, Kvahor Razok, and no, the elder Talmud Chacham has given the Psach, and I retract what I say in favor of him, meaning in other words that even though Rabbi Yossi would have, had he been alive at the time, been a Talmud of Rebbe, nevertheless Rebbe pays attention to and accepts his opinion and prefers it over his own. So we see from that also how much the Talmud Chacham of Eretz Yisrael loved and respected one another. So now the Gemara points out now we're going to point out the contrast between this and the style of learning that they had in Bavel. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Oshia, my dichtiv. What does it mean? There's a pasuk in Zechariah. There's a chapter in Zechariah where he compares the Jewish people to a flock of sheep, which is a metaphor that we find in a number of places in Tanakh. And he says, now a shepherd usually has a staff that he uses to help guide the sheep. So the pasuk says, "Va'ekach li shnei maklus, I took for myself two sticks, la'echad korosi, la'achad korosi noyam, one of them I called pleasantness, or la'achad korosi choivlin, and the other one I called the destroying ones." So what is that? So what are these two sticks and these two names represent? So he says, so Oshia says, Noyam, the staff that's called Noyam, pleasantness, that refers to the Talmud Chacham. Zechariah is living at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. So in his times, you had most of the Jewish people had remained behind in Babel and hadn't come to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis Hamikdash and resettle Eretz Yisrael. There were 40,000 some Jews had come to Eretz Yisrael for that purpose. So from then on, there's going to be, for well over 1,000 years after that, there's going to be two major centers of Jewish life in the world in Eretz Yisrael and Babel. So now Zechariah is saying a Nevuah with a metaphor of how it's going to be with these two different centers of Jewish life and of learning and the different styles that are going to be in the different places. So Noyam Eretz Yisrael Shabbat Eretz Yisrael. That refers to the Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, Shaman Imin Zela Zeba Halacha. They're pleasant to one another in Halacha. So Rashi explains, in other words, that they're sitting in the Beis Medrash and learning Torah. When they have a difficulty, they would look it over together. And if one of them says something that's not quite right, then the other one would correct them gently. And therefore, they'd clarify it, but you didn't have this style of them fighting and competing with one another, but rather they got along in a very pleasant way. Choivlim, on the other hand, the other staff that Hashem calls in the Nevuah, Choivlim, the destroying ones, the wounding ones, Eilu Tamar Chacham Shem Bavel, that will refer to them, Tamar Chacham in Bavel, Shem Chablim Zela Zeba Halacha, that they wound and they damage one another in Halacha. They bring kashus one against the other in a very sharp and very angry tone. You see throughout the Gemara, a lot of times you'll have like the Chacham in Bavel. After all, the Talmud Bavli, much of it is based on the Torah of the Chacham in Bavel, and you see all the time in the Gemara. You'll learn a piece of Gemara, and one of the Chachamim will say, one of the Amoraim will say something, and everybody else will be jumping down his throat with a zillion questions, and you don't know what you're talking about. And sometimes we even find in the Gemara where they call each other names, and what you said is not correct, and then so on and so forth. You didn't have that style in Eretz Yisrael. That's Noyan versus Choivlin. So Marashah has a long explanation about this, and on the following piece of Gemara. basically, he explains the Gemara. There's a Gemara in Ksugas that says that the Jews of Eretz Yisrael had greater chokhmah than the ones above her. We know Avira Eretz Yisrael Machim. We had a little piece about it in Bava Basra a few weeks ago, that the air of Eretz Yisrael makes a person wise. So therefore, so just living in Eretz Yisrael made the Chachamim there wiser and had greater abilities in Torah. Then the Gemara says, now, on the other hand, when one of the Chacham, and the Gemara says over there, one Talmud Chacham in Bavel is equal to even greater than two Talmud Chacham in Bavel. And the Gemara gives an example over there, and then the Gemara goes on to say, now, if a Talmud Chacham from Bavel moves to Eretz Yisrael, then he's actually even greater, he's twice as great as the native Chacham of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara gives an example over there, Rabbi Yirmiya, when he was in Bavel, he grew up in Bavel, and he was such a junior Talmud Chacham that many times he couldn't follow what they were discussing in the Mishmash, he couldn't follow the argument. Then he went to Eretz Yisrael and became one of the greatest Chacham over there, so much so that we find in a number of places in Shas, he talks about when he hears something that the Chacham in Bavel said, he dismisses it, Bavloi Tipshoi, those foolish Bavliim, like they don't have the ability to understand Torah properly. So Maharshal explains in that vein over here, this is why Noyam is in Loshen Yochid and Choyvlim is in Loshen Rabin, representing Eretz Yisrael and Bavel respectively. So those are the two different styles. There's an interesting thing. The Shem B'Shmuel brings an interesting idea about it. He explains basically that the reason behind this is the avoida of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, he says, is more in the Kav of Asei Toiv. The avoida in Bavel or any place else in Chutz Laaretz is more in Sur Meira. So Sur Meira, necessarily, then you have to fight against your Yetzer Hara, you have to fight against Klippus and all that. So therefore, it developed in them this combative style of they have to fight one another to find the truth of the Torah as well, as opposed to in Eretz Yisrael, where it was more the Asei Toiv kind of avoida. So therefore, they could do it in a more gentle way. In fact, it's very possible. I was thinking when I was learning this that actually it could be, you know, like this. We have the famous expression of the Tzemachetik Machda Eretz Yisrael. Maybe that gives another layer of meaning in it. In Chutz Laaretz, be able to work in the Asei Toiv way and not just in the Sur Meira way. Anyway, so there's that, and there's a number of different points that Mefoshim make about why it is, Taka, why there was this difference, but that's how it is. There was this difference. Okay. Similarly, the Gemara continues, and from another Nevuah of Zechariah, Zechariah had seen a Nevuah where we have part of this Nevuah is in the Haftarah of Shabbos Hanukkah, but this is this pasuk that the Gemara is going to quote, is from after that. So he sees a menorah, and he sees two olive trees standing on each side of the menorah, and he sees olive oil dripping from the olives into a bowl that feeds all the lamps of the menorah. And he says, so he asks, what does all this represent? Vayomer, and the Malach says to me, Eila shnei b'nei hayitzher ha'oimdim. And he says, these are the two sons of the olive that are standing. The pasuk continues, Ha'oimdim al adon kol ha'aretz, that are standing and attending on Hashem, the master of the entire world. And earlier in the Nevuah, he says, Shnayim zeisim aleha, he says, I saw two olive trees or olive branches on either side of the menorah. So what do they represent? Yitzhar, what does it mean? These two trees of Yitzhar, which is oil. So we have, in other words, the point is he's calling it by two different names. In one pasuk he's calling them Zaysim, and then a few pasukim later he's calling them Yitzhar. So in the symbol sense, fine, Zaysim means olives and Yitzhar means oil, but why is he calling in one pasuk he's calling them the olives and in the other one he's calling them the oil? So Rabbi Yitzchok says, same thing. It represents also, again, the difference in style between, in an approach between the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael and those of Bavel. Yitzhar Amar Rabbi Yitzchok Edutim Nacham Mishab Eretz Yisrael. This refers to the Nacham in Eretz Yisrael. Chenuichen Zelo Zeba Halacha Keshem and Zayis. They're gentle and smooth with one another in discussing halacha like olive oil. So olive oil is very, very soft and very, very, very slippery and all that. So the same way, the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael, they were very soft and gentle to one another in halacha. Ushnaim Zaysim Aleha, on the other hand, when it says there were two olive trees standing on either side of the menorah, Eder Tamar Chacham Shabbat Bavel, Shemeririn Zela Zeba Halacha Kezais. This refers to the Tamar Chacham and Bavel, who are bitter to one another like an olive. It can mean the wood of the olive tree is bitter. You find, for example, when the dove brought back an olive leaf to Noach, and you have the famous thing that I better my food should be bitter as long as it comes from Hashem. You have also the olive itself is quite bitter before you press it, and as opposed to the olive oil from it is very gentle. So the bitter olive tree, or the olive itself, represents the bitter, combative, fighting style of the Chachamim in Babel. The Gemara mentions in Kedushin the famous thing. That's Vohev V'Sufa, that they fight with one another and they look like enemies one to another. And then the V'Sufa, but at the end of it there's Avos Yisro because they came to the truth. So that was the style in Babel. Okay. In this connection, the Gemara mentions another point from one of Zechariah's Nevuos about the qualities of the Jews of Babel. Ksiv, so in another one of Zechariah's Nevuas, he describes, Va'esa einai va'ere, he says, I lifted up my eyes in the Nevuah, and I saw, V'hine shtayim noshin yotzes, I saw two women coming out, V'ruach v'chanfehem, and they had wind under their wings, for wind or air or whatever, ruach, you know, wind, mepashas, under their wings, v'lahenuch nafayim kechanfei ha-chassidah, and they had wings like the wings of a chassidah, which is usually translated as a stork. And they were lifting and carrying the eifah between earth and heaven. Earlier in the psukim before that, Zechariah describes how he saw an eifah, which elsewhere the Gemara mentions that refers to that they tracked the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah in that eifah and got rid of it. So now he says he sees these two women are carrying the eifah between and they're flying between earth and heaven. And Zechariah continues, so I said to the Malach who's speaking to me, where are they taking this eifah? And he said to me, they're going to build a house for it in the land of Shinar. Shinar is another name for Babel. So therefore, so in other words, we're saying there's certain qualities that landed in Babel. So the Gemara in Kiddushin explains, it actually brings it over here, this refers to Chanufa and to the bad midas, Chanufa and Gasus Aruach, which came down to Babel. Chanufa usually means flattery, like flattering a Rosha and saying that he's doing good. We had a few days ago in Sota for Sira, there was a whole piece in the Gemara about the evils of Chanufa, of telling a Rosha that you're doing something right. But here it actually translates Chanufa as hypocrisy, a person showing himself off as a chosid, as an Erev Chayid, when he's really not. So therefore, the descriptions that Zechariah has of these women and their wings reflect these two midas. The wind under their wings, the wind like the wind that a person puffs himself up, refers to Gasas HaRuach, to being Balik Gaiva, and the wings like a Hasidah, is they show themselves off as if they're Hasidim. So these two qualities, these two midas rois, says Rabbi Yochanan, came down to Babel, and therefore the positive is saying, Livnei Slavayis Be'eretz Shinar, that they were going to build a house for it in the land of Shinar. No, not the Tanoim and Amoraim. First of all, very few of the Tanoim lived in Babel. But Rabbi Yochanan is saying that these qualities, these midos, can be found among the people of Babel. Marsha has a long explanation over here, which I'll explain in a second, that he says we are actually referring to not just to the regular Jews in Babel, but to a certain extent also to the Melech HaChamim. But wait, let's finish the piece of Gemara first, and then we'll discuss that. So the Gemara says, the question is, the Gemara asks, Gasas HaRuach leBavel Noches? You're telling me that Gasas HaRuach, that Gaiva, came down to Babel. V'omamar, we have Gemara in Kiddushin, we have the famous Gemara about a sort of cabin of this and this and this came down to the world, and each one, nine of them went to a certain place, a certain group or whatever, and one of them is a sort of cabin, Gasas HaRuach Yodel Olam, ten measures of Gaiva came down to the world. Tes Notla Elam, which is an area in Persia, it's the area where Shushan is the capital of it, nowadays it's part of Iran, Notla Elam, so Elam got nine measures of it, the Echad, Kola Aleph, Kola Kula, and one to the whole rest of the world. So Gasas HaRuach, more than any place else, you're going to find in Elam, not in Babel. So what do you mean that Gasas HaRuach came to Babel? And the answer is Ein, the Babel Nochus, it did in fact come down to Babel in the first place, as the Chaviah sees in his Nebuah, the Ishtar Bubi, who did Ishtar Biv La'Elam, but then it spread forth and left Babel and wound up in Elam. And the Gemara says, De Kanami. In fact, you can see that from the wording, from the wording of the Pasuk, Dichtiv Livno Slavayis Be'eretz Shinar. Because it says they're going to build a house for it in Shinar. Implying they're going to build the house, but there's a few things. Rashi over here explains that it means it says Livno Slav, to build for her. Her meaning only one of these two midas. So only one of them remained in Bavel, the other one moved elsewhere. Which one? Hanufa remained in Bavel, but Gatz Saruach moved elsewhere. In Kedushin, Rashi mentions another point as well, the fact that it says, there's other explanations as well, the fact that it says Livnos, to build, implies they didn't actually succeed in building that house for it in Bavel. Also, this is one of three places in Tanakh where the word La is written without the mapik He. Usually you have a dot, the letter He, that you pronounce the word La with an audible puff of breath, but this is one of three places in Tanakh where you have it without that. So we doubt it as if it said Loi, as if it said not La, but La, with an aleph, meaning no. So in other words, the house didn't actually get built, because it wound up moving from there to Elam. So Shmamina, so that proves it, that didn't remain in Bavel. So the Gassus of Bavel, Loi, so you're telling me that Gassus of Ruach, that Gaiva didn't come to Bavel. V'omamar, don't we also learn in a Braisa, Simon the Gassus of Ruach and Nius. A simon, a sign of people who have gasus aruach, who are proud, is anius, and they're poor. Is that they're poor? The anius of Bavel noches, and we know that poverty came to Bavel. Many of the Jews in Bavel were very poor. And gasus aruach and poverty were saying go hand in hand. So if there's lots of poverty in Bavel, there must be a lot of gasus aruach there also. Sometimes you see that the person is poor, and Adarabah, they have a greater gas of the Ruach from it. I don't know. But that's the Gemara's answer. No, my Anius, Anius Torah. It can, but on the other hand, not necessarily. But wait, that's what the hold on, that's what the Gemara answers over here. The Gemara answers, my Anius, Anius Torah. When we talk about poverty over here, we mean poverty of Torah. That you won't find in Bavel. When we're saying that Gas Aruch and Anius go hand in hand, that means Anius, that means a poverty, a lack of Torah. And that you found more in Elam. Namely, in other words, because the point is when a person is Gas Aruch, he's not going to want to bother learning from others. He's going to say, I know it all already. And in Elam, you have that kind of quality. Dichtiv, as we find a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, it says metaphorically about the Jewish people, Ochos Lanu Ktana, we have a little sister, V'Shadayim Ein La, and she has no breasts, that she's not able to nourish her children, V'Omer Rav Yechanan, Zu Elam, that refers to the country of Elam, They were able to learn Torah. There were Talmid Chachamim there, but it didn't have the schus to teach. Namely, Rashi explained Daniel in particular lived in Elam. We find that one of Daniel's visions is set in Shushan, which was the capital of Elam. Now, Daniel was an outstanding Talmid Chacham, but he didn't have anybody to teach Torah over there. So therefore, it was Zochsa Lumad v'la Zochsa Lamed. Why? Because the people of Elam, the Jews in Elam, were Gasei HaRuach, they were Gaivadik, and they weren't interested in learning Torah from him. As opposed to, in Bavel, in that time, was Ezra, who was not only one of the greatest Talmid Chacham of all time. Earlier we had the piece in Gemara where it said that the Torah was given through Moshe Rabbeinu, and if it hadn't, then it would have been given through Ezra, and a certain aspect of it was given through Ezra, the new script, as you had a few days ago in Enyah. But Ezra was not only able to learn Torah, he was able to lamed b'Yisrael chokul mishpat. He was able to find many talmidim, many people in Bavel who wanted to learn his Torah, and therefore he became one of the greatest teachers of Torah as well. So in other words, anius, physical anius, sure, you'll find that in Bavel a lot, but anius of Torah, that you won't find in Bavel. And therefore, you don't find Gassus Aruach there so much either. Gassus Aruach and Anius of Torah went hand in hand and wound up in Elam. As far as Hanufa, as far as false piety, as far as hypocrisy, that you will find in Bavel, the Gemara is saying. Another point, by the way, why Gassus Aruach and Torah don't go together. The Maharal explains, Torah is a ruchniistic thing. Gassus Aruach is that a person is making himself more gashmiistic. So therefore, it opposes, it won't fit together with being able to learn Torah properly. Maushal has an explanation over here how all of these pieces of the Gemara over here fit together. So he says like this. First of all, actually, it gives an interesting explanation of the Pasuk in Tehillim, Chavolim Noflu Libanimim, Af Nachlos Shofra Alai. You have throughout Marashah's Perushim, you have many times very interesting Perushim of Pesukim. You can practically collect them all together and have a new Perush on Tanakh, I think. But anyway, so he says, Chavolim and Banimim reflect, we just said before, Chovlim and Noyam. So what happens is Chavolim Noflu Libanimim, when you have a Chovlim, when you have a Chacham from Bavel, from the place of Chovlim, who comes to Banimim, to the place of Noyam, to Eretz Yisrael, Af Nachos Shofra Aloi, then it becomes greater and better even than the ones who lived in Eretz Yisrael and Nachla all the time, because like that Gemara says in Ksubas about Rabbi Yirmiya, that a person from Bavel becomes a tremendously greater Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael.
That you have to forget that Abu Babi.
So Reb Zeira had to forget, that's part of one of the explanations, is in fact this. He had to forget that combative style that they had in Babel in order to be able to learn the Torah in the style of the Chum of Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, by the way, that was in today's Daf Yomi, actually, we mentioned that point that Reb Zeira moved from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and the Gemara tells something over there about Dinim of Treifus in connection with that, where there was a certain case that they considered Treif in Babel, but in Eretz Yisrael they considered Kosher, and Reb Zeira followed that, etc. The Gemara has an interesting discussion about that. Anyway. So, Maharsha goes on to say like this. The vote is that when there's Chanufa, and first of all, he says Chanufa and Gassus Aruach, first of all, he learns that those remained at least to some extent in Babel, even though the Gemara seems to be saying that Gassus Aruach wasn't found in Babel, but at least it first came down there, and therefore Maharsha says that prevented them from becoming the greatest Talmid Chacham that they could compared to the ones in Eretz Yisrael. Now, he says Chanufa and Gassus Aruach don't usually go together. He learns Chanufa in its usual meaning of flattery. So if a person is gas ruach, if a person is gaivadik, he's not usually the type to go and say to a rosha, you're doing good. Why should he want to give somebody else the credit when he himself prefers to take the credit for himself? So those two things usually don't go together. And nevertheless, we see over here that they're going together. So that's what he says. That's where ben ha'oretz, ben ha'shamayim, like they can't find themselves a place in shamayim or on oretz. That's why in Zechariah's pasuk, he has them flying it between heaven and earth. Anyway, then he goes on to say,
limbo.
But what do you have? He says, in Bavel, you do kind of have both those things. That, he says like this, in Eretz Yisrael, what they would do is, we said they were very pleasant to one another in learning Torah. So the Chachamim would get along with each other very well in the Beis Medrash. Meanwhile, when they saw Rishoyim improperly, then they would go and tell them off and not show them any respect. Meanwhile, Maharsha says in Bavel, they did it the other way around. They did it the wrong way around. They would have Gassus Aruach for themselves, that I'm going to defend my position no matter what. But when it came to the Rishoyim, when it came to being Machnif the Rishoyim, then that they would do. So therefore, Maharsha explains, that's why this piece goes in over here. It's all helping us to understand why it is that the quality of learning Torah in Bavel was not as great as it was in Eretz Yisrael. With that said, by the way, there's a tshuva of the Rambam and later Mefoshim bring it as well, that it depends. In different times in Bavel, there were different times when it sometimes, we're saying the Torah, the learning of the level of learning there was less than Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam mentions, for example, we find also in Cholin later on in the Masechta, we find there were times when there were wars and other troubles over there, different things like that, that prevented them from learning Torah to the fullest. Later on, though, things were much worse in Eretz Yisrael, and on the other hand, things were quite calm and good in Bavel, and then the Talmid Chacham in Bavel became great, as great, or even greater than the ones in Eretz Yisrael. And after all, the Gemara that we learn, and that most of Halacha is based on, is the Talmud Bavli, after all. Well, Rabbi Shimon Elazar was from Eretz Yisrael. Fine, we're not saying every single person in Eretz Yisrael was a calm person, but still, yeah. I mean, there's a whole famous sicha from the Rebbe about that story, by the way, that Rabbi Shimon Elazar saw that the guy's ugliness represents that he has an inner ugliness as well, and the only way to get him to recognize the Eivishter is going to be to put him down, and then the guy immediately says, Leichla Uman Shasani, showing that he had that knowledge, that awareness of the Eivishter all along. Yeah, so even that could fit, though, with this idea that the Talmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael never had a problem putting down and telling off the Rishoyim, and in that story, according to the way that Rebbe explains it, Rabbi Shimon Elazar thought that the guy is an out and out Russia. Yeah. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, you're right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, though, that according to that explanation from the Sikha, that he thought the guy is such an out and out Russia that he has no awareness of the Eivishter at all, then it fits very well with what Maharsha is saying over here, that the Chum of Eretz Yisrael would act that way towards the Rishayim. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues, my Bavel. So why is Bavel called that? What do you mean, why is Bava called that? It says in the Pasuk, in Parashas Noach, that it was called that, Kishom Bolal Hashem Sas Kol Ha'aretz. Marashal says, fine, but the real question is, then, it should be called Bolal. Why Bava? Where does the second days come from? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Blula B'mikra, Blula B'mishna, Blula B'talmud. It means that it's blended together of Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud. Now, Tosfos points out over here and in other places in Shas that that means the Gemara Bavli is blended together of all those things. You're learning black Gemara. You're learning Mikra and you're learning Mishnah and you're learning Talmud, which is the analysis of the Mishnah. The relevance of that is that since the Gemara tells us that a person should be dividing his time in three, and every day he should be learning one third of his time Mikra, and one third Mishnah, and one third Talmud, so Tosfos witness from a better time, when a person learns Talmud Bavli, then he's Mekayim all those three things, because all of them are included in the Talmud Bavli. Nevertheless, Tosfos goes on to say what we actually do is every day in davening, we do the Parsha of the Talmud, so that way we're learning Torah Shvachsav. We're learning Tanakh. We have Ezo Mekoyman, a Perek of Mishnayos, and we have the Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, which counts as Talmud. So that way, every single day, we're beginning our davening with all those three things. Anyway, so according to that way of understanding, in other words, Rabbi Yochanan is explaining that it's called Bavel, Meloshin, that it's combined together, it's blended together of all these three things, and that's the greatness of the Talmud Bavli. Marsha actually, though, also explains that this is part of the negativity against Bavel. He says what the Gemara is saying is, we haven't picked the others, the proper seder of learning, ben Chomesh Shanim L'Mikra, ben Esther Shanim L'Mishnah, etc. Meanwhile, he says in Bavel, because they had Gassus Aruach, they weren't satisfied with, what, I'm going to wait until 10 years old to start learning Mishnah? I'm going to wait until 15 to start learning Gemara? No, I'm big enough and I'm great enough to start to jump into it even now.
So they were small.
So therefore, even when they were small, they would already be doing that, and therefore it's all mixed up. So Maharal understands it that way. By the way, in the Maharal, the Maharal was the Maharal lived in the same generation as Maharal, and the Maharal also was very disturbed by the fact that in the yeshivas, in the Chadorim of his times, they started the kids on Gemara very early, as they do nowadays also. So the Maharal actually set up Chadorim in Prague, where he insisted that the curriculum should be literally Ben Chomesh Shana L'Mikra, Ben Esther Shana L'Mishnah, and only Ben Chamesh Esrei L'Gemara. So that it shouldn't be blula, as Marshall is saying over here. With that said, a number of Achronim pointed out there is justification for the way we do it. In particular, you know, nowadays you have people are more able to stay in yeshiva until an older age, but back then it wasn't so. Often kids would have to leave at an early age and go work and whatever, so therefore you want to give them an opportunity to learn Gemara before they have to enter the work world. The Gemara finishes off this piece. The Pasuk says in Eicha, "V'machshakim hoshivani k'meisei olam." Hashem has made me sit in darkness like the people who are dead forever. So Omer Rav Yirmiyah, Zeh Talmud Shel Bavel. So Rav Yirmiyah, the same Rav Yirmiyah we were saying before, that he himself was from Bavel and then moved to Eretz Yisrael and became so much greater. He says this refers to the Talmud of Bavel. Why? Because Rashi says again, since they're not gentle with one another, so therefore they end up having a lot of status. They end up having a lot of unresolved doubts, which they're not able to with this approach of fighting with one another. So therefore they end up like literally in the dark as far as what the halacha should be. We see so many times in the Gemara that it finishes off teiku. Marsha says another point as well. The Gemara is taking the word Olam over here as related to the name Elam, the place we said before where they had Anius of Torah and Gassus Aruach. So he says, so now we're saying that in Talmud Shel Bavel, they have Kmesei Olam, the Gemara, their learning is all mixed up, like the ones who live in Elam, and everything is a big darkness over there. A number of Mephoshim point out that another point of it is, there's an Eitz Yosef brings from a Rashi elsewhere that points out another reason is why it's called Machshakim, is because the Gemara Bavli is very, very deep. You learn a Gemara Yerushalmi. The truth is the Yerushalmi is a little hard to learn for other reasons. We're less familiar with it. The great Mephoshim didn't write on it, etc. But when you actually learn a piece of Yerushalmi, it's much more straightforward generally than a piece of Bavli. A Bavli, you have a tremendous amount of Shaka Vitalia. So it's very deep and very hard to understand to get to the bottom line, to the conclusion. As opposed to the Yerushalmi, in that sense, if you understand it, then if you understand the Lashon of it and everything, then it's a lot easier. So in that sense, the Gemara Bavli is Machshakim. It's a dark depth where it's very hard to, when you yourself, in other words, we're not just talking about the discussions between the Chachamim, like Rashi's saying, we're saying even you, learn a black Gemara, it's sometimes very hard to understand what the bottom line is, the conclusion that we reached. With that said, there's a point that a number of Mephoshim make, and you can find it in a lot of places in Chassidus as well, that this is Yisrona Omitoch HaChoshech. Adirabe, you have, because in Babel, they had to read through such a tremendous Choshech of the land and of the style of learning and everything to arrive at the Emes. Therefore, precisely because of that, you have a Yisrona Or, and the fact is the Gemara Bavli is what the whole Jewish people rely on, much more so than the Talmud Yerushalmi. There's places where it talks about the Yerushalmi is Yosher, the Bavli is Choser, but Choser in a way is a greater thing. Yisrona Or, Mitoch HaChoshech, that all of that give and take and all of that is out. So that explains in Tanya, every time you have a kasha, it means there are klippas involved, and you have to get through the klippas and cut through them to get at the truth of Torah that's hidden behind it, but that makes for a greater Ur in the end. Yeah. Okay. Yomi Mashiach Ugo'ola, day 7. That's talking about Ki Ishechad B'Lev Echad. So in that vein, how will we mevatel the Golus? By being mevatel the cause of Golus, which what was Golus caused by before, like we said, by Sinas Chinam. So now we've already finished with Masenu Vavadesenu of the time of Golus. So surely the Rebbe says, this is in Tavshin Onala, surely the cause of Golus has already been fixed up. And therefore, what's the stress of Avos Yisrael that we have to do now? Not so much to fix up the negative, but rather as a taste, as a foretaste of the Geula, and even the beginning of the Geula Amidus Vashlema, which is connected, again, like we learned in yesterday's piece, about the Nekuda Sa'achros, about the Yechida, that's higher than any division. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis, we were talking about if you borrow somebody else's talis when you do and don't make the bracha. Now, a more general din in that connection, you're allowed to borrow somebody else's talis and put it on without his das. Now, usually you have a concept called shoyl shlemi das, nikud gazlin. You borrow somebody without the other person knowing, then it's called gzela. But over here, that would be when there's a chashash of it getting ruined. Here, there's no chashash of it getting ruined because you're only wearing it for a short while and then you're putting it back. So now we have a different rule that we can apply. A person would prefer that a mitzvah should be done with his mamon where there's no chisor and kiss involved. Now, though, if you find the talus folded, then you have to fold it afterwards. Otherwise, then the guy's going to be makbid, then it would be shoyl shlemi das, and that would be gazlid. Now, you don't have to fold it exactly as it was before. You fold it with other folds, that's good enough. Shabbos, though, is different than because you can't fold it on, because you can't fold a talus on Shabbos, so then therefore, So it's now the owner is going to realize it wasn't folded because he can't fold it on Shabbos, and therefore he's not going to be makbid on that. So Shabbos would be allowed to take the talus, even though it was folded, and not fold it afterwards. Tefillin is when we get to Hilchos Tefillin, eventually, yeah, we'll talk about the same idea over there, right? Yeah. Okay.